Welcome everybody to another podcast of Life Talk. Today is a very, very special day, ladies and gentlemen. I have the one and only at Saria Psychology with me. I had my eye on her for a while now. I've been talking about her on my social. I shared some clips. She's a relationship coach, therapist who is professionally trained in helping people build better relationships. A lot of you guys have been requesting a lot more of these podcasts, so I'm very happy to now introduce Saria Khan. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, where are you tuning in from?
I'm from Dubai. I'm living in Dubai for the last couple of years. I'm born and raised in London, hence the English accent, but I'm actually now residing in Dubai, and I'm trying to convince you to come out to Dubai. So because I kind of do that with everybody, I kind of encourage them to come and live here because it's fabulous.
Yeah, we spoke a little bit before and I think it's working. I think I'm gonna head out there soon.
I'm trying to lure Jesse to come and stay in Dubai, and that way we can do one in person one day, inshallah. We can do a podcast in person.
So for everybody that's listening in right now, could you share a little bit about your background and how did you get into this coaching?
Of course. So I studied psychology when I was younger, and I kind of went into educational psychology, and I started working with children. And I was going down the working with children educational psychologist route, completed that, but instead, when I went to schools, I really enjoyed teaching. So I then became a psychology teacher for several years. So I started working with teenagers, teaching them psychology. And in the midst of teaching them psychology, particularly when I would teach them about relationships, I realized how important this information was for adults. And I just couldn't believe that this sort of stuff is not taught to everybody. The kids would have such light bulb moments every time I would explain something psychologically to them, and they would be like, "Oh, is this why I get so jealous? Or is this why I get anxious?" And it made me realize that maybe people need to hear more of this. So during lockdown, I started, my course towards psychotherapy. And just about a year and a half ago, I started posting online, thinking nothing of it. But as you know, with social media, you can just post and think nothing's going to happen, and it can actually change your entire world. That's the beauty of social media. So I managed to just kind of post it online, and then I realized how many people actually need one-to-one coaching or need some kind of coaching in that regard. So I stopped teaching, and now I go into one-to-one coaching for people who are looking for, it doesn't have to be actually relationship orientated, but I do realize that people who suffer a lot in psychologically only realize that they need help psychologically when they get into relationships. When they get into relationships and feel a bit traumatized or feel like they can't change their behavior, then they start analyzing their actual behavior in general. And so relationships tend to trigger the need for therapy. And so that's why I kind of do relationship content online.
And I did see a lot of it. I saw you also sat down with Mike
Mike
Thurston,
Thurston.
and a lot of the topics were about high value women, how high value men is something we talk about on this podcast. Could you define what that means for you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, unfortunately, it's like quite a shallow term, both high value man and high value women. And lots of people get a little bit triggered by it because they're just saying, well, why are we always talking about high value? Because it's a different world for high value men and women, unfortunately. And this is in no way to degrade anybody, but high value men and women, their dating scene is completely different to the average person, not necessarily in a good way. Not necessarily in a good way, but what I would say a high value man, just like high value man and high value women, there's some precursors. There are some ingredients they just have to have in order to be there. For men, it might be wealth. For women, it's beauty. They just need that as a starting step. But to go above and beyond that, it does take psychological elements. So I would say the baseline for men would be to be successful, to be attractive, and to have plenty of options. It makes them somewhat high value. A deeper level in terms of a high value man, I would say the number one ingredient of a high value man is lots of self-control. And what I mean by self-control is they are selective with their mind, body, and soul. They're very selective with the women that they go to bed with. They're very selective with the men that they choose to do business with, and they're very selective where they like to place themselves in terms of places, environments, and stuff. And that creates even more value. So I say they have the baseline, but their psychology, the number one trait is self-control, lots of discipline. For women in high value, they again have the precursors, which is beauty, a bit of, well-spoken, but the psychological trait that they need in order to be high value as a woman is loyalty. They need sexual exclusivity and loyalty. They can't, and that also includes online behavior. She can't be truly high value if every man and his son can access pictures of her almost naked. She immediately removes her exclusivity. So I'd say beauty, intelligence, all of those things, but that psychological trait, just like men need self-control, women need loyalty. They need loyalty. There needs to be an air of mystery about her physicality in order for her to be truly high value. So I'd say those are the two ingredients for men and women that are actually needed beyond the superficial.
That is very interesting. I heard you say for a high value man, you said attractive. A high value man has to be attractive. Interestingly, research was just published by Yale University, where women said for a successful man, it's more important about that they're financially free, as opposed that they're not so good looking. And what is good looking, that's very
I would,
subjective. But I think for women, they might not have as a high standard as men have towards women. Do you agree with that?
I think unfortunately the world and women particularly are becoming more shallow. And so back in the day, being highly successful was enough to keep your woman because you offer her a lifestyle that she can't access without it. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we're so hedonistic, we're so pleasure seeking. Now, when a woman is compromising on looks, she is less likely to be loyal. And in my experience, when a woman is dating a man who is high value based purely on money, but not looks, she's more likely to be unfaithful. So a true high value man doesn't require his partner to compromise. And that includes look. And same with women, a truly high value woman, there's no compromise. The man doesn't have to think, oh, well, she's a bit dumb, so it doesn't matter. Oh, she's a bit promiscuous, but it doesn't matter. There's no compromise. It's only on the less valuable. Now, a man who's incredibly out of shape, who's not that attractive, but is super rich, he's going to attract a woman who's happy to compromise. Therefore, he cannot be high value.
I hear you. And you also mentioned the word self-control. What do you mean with self-control? Like not cheating?
What I mean, well, cheating, the thing is, what it is even if it's cheating or whatever it is, there's an element of foregoing your desires for your long-term goal. Now, what I mean by that is if you've got a beautiful family, you've got kids, and you've got a wife, but any woman walking down the street can disrupt that, then you're not that high value. Same with women. It's like if there's no self-control, you become accessible and available to
Oh,
every
yeah.
woman. Now, a high value man is inaccessible. It, just like Chanel, he cannot be high street brand. He has to be a Chanel. There's a waiting list for Chanel's. There's a waiting list for
For
Rolex, but
MS.
there's not a waiting list for Zara. And that's not because there's anything wrong with it, but there's high value. Now, not everybody can access a Chanel. If you're a man that any woman can access, you cannot be high value. I know successful footballers, I know successful kind of, really successful like rappers or whatever it is. They've got no value in person because they're so accessible. They're so accessible that you think, oh
But
my
it's for
God, I can have any money.
most high value men though, like, and especially if I look around and
It's
the
cheap, though, no?
billionaires and yeah, but
Yes.
there's a
But
majority of them.
and that's why there's so much confusion because men think money makes you high value. Money makes you desirable. High value is inaccessible.
Oh yeah.
And that's the difference. And
I'm
same like
so
beauty.
glad you touch on this. I'm so glad because
Oh.
I hear so many times that, oh, you're a high value man. It's in your nature, it's in your masculine imperative to cheat, to have intercourse with multiple women when you feel like it, and then come back to your wife and she should just accept
Disgusting.
it. And this has been, no,
No,
but you see this, right? It's been a conversation
it's
for,
cheap
yeah.
though. Yeah, and the thing is, this is the problem with a lot of the content at the moment. They think being promiscuous is an ingredient to high value. But here's what being promiscuous does. It makes you accessible and available to low value women. Whereas being high value is the average Jenny on the street cannot come near you. Just like the average Joe can't come near a high value woman. Absolutely not. Not an option for him. Like, it's just don't talk to me. You can't act. Now, if you are the hottest guy in the room and you've got a millionaire, but everybody can access you, those girls can no longer brag that she's been with you because you're available to everybody. It's embarrassing. Whereas when
Amen.
you're a man, that it's like a struggle to get a text out of you, it's a struggle to sleep with you. You can't believe how valuable you come across to other women.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And
You
that's
went a step
yeah.
further. You said not even get a text back from you.
Well, you're just not thirsty.
No,
These are the
I hear you.
high-value men. They're just not thirsty. And high-value men are not going to risk their entire reputation, family for sex. Sex is so meaningless to them because it's so available to them. But men who are not used to that and not around that all the time, they will risk it all to have sex with a girl or have sex with multiple girls. You cannot be a disciplined, successful, high-value man if you can't control your urges, whether that's with food, whether that's with sex, whether that's with money. If you can't control those urges, how can you claim to be a high value man? Whereas when you're disciplined with money, you're disciplined with your body, and you're disciplined with sex, you're an undefeatable man.
Wow. I told you guys I was looking forward to this podcast.
Well, Jesse, you can vouch for that. I mean, by your physique, there's no way you give in to every impulse. There's no way you give in to every desire to
Well,
eat more. Impossible.
and
And that's how you have
right now,
kids.
but it took me, and I think for most men it takes, and for everybody that's different, but I think when you are in your early 20s, you might, you make a little bit of money, you think you're the man, you're successful. What happens a lot, in full transparency, is that you start to believe that, okay, amongst your peers, you want to have the hottest model, you want to sleep with this girl, you want to sleep with that girl, not even because it's fulfilling or energetically the right thing to do, no, but it's because you want to be the man. You want to be the top G, right? That's what they say nowadays. By the way, I texted them, and they
He's
texted me
well,
back. They
right?
texted me back today, Andrew and Tristan
Yeah, I
both, and
spoke
they
to
are
him
well.
briefly as
Yes. Oh,
well. He's
lovely.
like some amazing. Yeah, he handles everything like a top G, so he doesn't seem too traumatized. I think I was more traumatized than he
Oh
was
yeah,
for
terrible
from
situation.
it.
Terrible. But so they're good now there. But we'll talk about that
Praise be
for
to
sure
God.
another time. And so the top G thing, that was back in the day, like, how are, when you walk into a room and you can have a nice car, you can have a nice watch, but the most valuable thing for a man is who's the woman next to him. And if you are young, you believe that is how hot she is, how young she is, right? That's low fat, low value, low frequency. That's not like, it's immature. So I had to go through that process and all those failures, falling my face a couple of times, being used for the wrong reason, attracting the wrong women, to come to this point and be like, you know what? I just turned 30. What do I really want? Well, now I know. Now I know what I want. Now I know what's important for me. Now I know what I can give my woman and what's important also energetically to receive back and forth. So yes, I do reserve myself, but it's a process though,
Absolutely.
for
It's
a
a process,
man.
but here's what I say about with men who want like the youngest or the hottest girl on their arm rather than the one with the most loyalty and substance. Having that desire is like the same desire that somebody who's made new money wants a gold chain and wants a flashy car. It's a shortcut symbol of status. They want to say, I finally made it. Here's my big flashy watch. Here's my big chain. But when you speak to men whose parents are millionaires, They don't even wear a watch. They don't have shortcut symbols for status. Same thing with
Yeah.
women. When you meet men who come from a legacy, who come from money, come from a family, what happens is they tend to marry women similar age, similar kind of looks wise as well. Mark Zuckerberg, these Bill Gates and every, the most high value men, maybe even a George Clooney, they will choose people who are connected, who they are connected to, because they don't look for short-term symbols of I've made it. But getting a girl half your age that you can't have a conversation with, or getting a girl that's the hottest girl in the room, but she's exchanging numbers with other men that you know, it doesn't add to your value. And it screams new money. It screams new money. Whereas when you get a woman who adds to substance and other men look at how much she loves you and how loyal she is, it screams, I get women already. I've had women. I don't need the shortcut. So that's why I actually find it cheap when I see a man who's really rich, old with a young girl, because it shows me you're not looking for a connection. You're looking to show people you've made it. And that's embarrassing. It's a bit like wearing a big flashy chain when you've just made money. Like, it's new
True.
money
Yeah.
behavior. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's why I
Absolutely.
say, because sometimes men will come to me and say, I've made a lot of money. Should I change my wife? Because isn't that the masculine thing to do? And I was like, absolutely not. That's the new money way to behave. But if
Yeah.
you look at legacy money, and if you look at the Bill Gates of the world, and if you look at the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, people who came from money and were educated and have a legacy, and Rothschild, for example, their family, they marry women of similar age, status, and appearance because they're looking to create a family, not showing other people I've made it, because the world knows they made it. And that's the kind of energy you want to bring into a room.
Yeah, I feel this. I feel
I'm
this. Yeah, no,
completely the
it,
opposite
this,
of what you hear from everyone else, right? I'm like the opposite.
I
I'm the
almost get
opposite.
emotional, guys. I almost get emotional because it's so true. And at the same time, when you talk about this, like, let there be no mistake, it's extremely difficult. We're talking about a 0.1%, if not less.
Zero. Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, when people ask me, and I'm sure you have this all the time, how do I find a high value partner? Well, you have to be it first. Be centered in your own energy, right? And then the question is, okay, how do you do that? Well, self-development, being the best version of yourself. And also what I kind of want to touch on as well, real quick, religion. Do you think that's an important role? At least it is for you, I know, right?
I'm very biased with that. So that's why I have to set a precursor with that. I'm incredibly biased when people ask me about religion because I am religious. I was raised in a religious environment. I have a very strong connection to faith. And my reason for this is, of course, I'm at an age and stage in my life where it's totally up to me if I want to be religious or not. The reason I love having a religion is human beings by nature are designed to worship and follow laws. It's how we're designed. We need guidance. We need it. Now, if you don't have God, you'll still follow norms and values, but they'll be set by society. So social media will teach you what's acceptable and unacceptable, or your culture will teach you. Someone will influence you on what you think is acceptable and unacceptable. When you have faith and God and religion, those rules are set by somebody who, God, so somebody I think cares about me. When you don't have it, you will follow the norms and values set by social media. And the problem with that is it's designed to make you a consumer, not a strong individual. So social media will teach you need surgery. Social media will teach you need to be a bad bitch. Social media will teach you need to be a man who's polygamous. It's not designed to be good for your soul. It's designed to make you a consumer. It's designed to make you lost. So that's why I think if you don't have faith, you are almost like an open wound, and society will shove you with loads of norms and values. And by having a faith, like for me personally, it felt like having a bandage or a bandage on my wound, so no one can really come through because I've already got protection there. So for me, I found it very protective having a God and having a faith, because it let me select what parts of society I indulge in and which parts I know are not good for my soul, and I just keep far away. But if I didn't have that faith, I would get lost like everybody else.
I want to touch on something because this is very different from, I think, what you've heard before when you had a podcast with Mike, and he knows that I have this opinion. I'm a very strong proponent of women empowerment. And what do I mean with that? Well, I believe from life experience and traveling and my psychology background as well, that we need more women in diplomatic leadership roles. That's my personal, opinion. I know that this might be different from what you have been saying, but I want to explain why I say that. What we see now in the world is that a lot of the world leaders today, the men, they don't have per se a good capability to lead with a level of diplomacy that, let's say, Angela Merkel has from Germany. Right, whatever you think about her politics doesn't really matter, but the way how she was bringing people together and how she wasn't ruling or making politics from a place of ego was actually really profound if you look at it. So I have to say, and even when I look at strong, powerful woman, I'm like, yeah, we need more of that. So I just wanted to share that because I know that you've shared some other things as well about that. What do you think?
You know what it is? I think there's no point having a woman in charge if she's highly masculine and she's like a dictator. And we've had that a lot in Britain where the leaders in charge, the female leaders, have a real masculine energy. I would love for more females to be in charge if they remain feminine. Otherwise, they lose their value. Then they just become negative women. So if I see women in charge and they have brought that nurture element and that compassion element and that idea of equality and safety and kindness, if they bring that to the table, I would be all for it. Majority of the time, living in Britain and seeing the Theresa Mays and all of that, they tend to be highly masculine, highly privileged women who have lost touch with the struggles of poor women or of children. They've lost touch with that. So then I don't see the purpose because we're just getting a woman who acts like a man to be in charge, and I'm not getting the femininity that I require in order to see strong leadership.
That's a good one. Can we talk here now that this is a nice bridge to talk about masculine and feminine roles and also masculine and
Absolutely.
feminine energy? What because you talk about femininity now, what do you want to see as a woman in a leader that represents you?
I would love to see somebody who looks at life and looks at society through the lens of the most vulnerable. I think part of being a woman is our high emotional intelligence. And because we are mothers by nature, even if you're not a mother, you have maternal instincts. We tend to look at life through the lens of a child. We know when they're hungry, we know when they're tired, we know when they're not feeling well, we can sense it. Now, what I would love to see in a leadership is she looks at society through the lens of the most vulnerable. So when you put a tax on, let's say you put a tax on food, you think, how would that poor child and that poor single mom be able to afford that? Well, she wouldn't be able to. So let's not tax the essentials of life. Or when they're putting things like, school systems, let's pay teachers more to work in rough areas and let's attract the best teachers to come there and da, da, da. So then we can change the education system in really rough areas rather than just terrible schools in terrible areas and keeping them in the cycle of poverty. So if for me to see a strong female leader, what I would like to see is every policy is made with that child in mind that has an alcoholic dad, an abusive mom, and has no head start in life. How do we make a society that makes that child's life better? Rather than how do we make a society that allows this corporation to make more money and that company to capitalize on this, that, and the other? That's what I would love to see.
And for a man.
From a male perspective, what I would like to see from a male perspective is I would say I would probably want the same thing. I really do want, I think the reality is, if we want a successful society, what we have to do is create a system that fights crime and promotes education. once you have those two things in line, everything else in life will fall into place. You'll get success and you'll get like rid of the problems. Fight crime and create education. Now, those two ingredients will enable people to work hard, see their money, and not worry that someone's going to steal it or not worry that it's going to disappear. When you control crime and education, that culture starts to flourish because you have safety with opportunity then.
So when it comes to the household, we see a lot, especially where I'm from, the Netherlands, we see a lot of parents that work together. They both want to, you know, kind of like feel to bring back the same to the household, as opposed to, I don't want to say like traditional, because for me, this is the thing, right? They want to talk about, is this traditional, is this not? I don't know if it's traditional. I think it's quite the norm, but we kind of diffused the norm to make it seem like, oh, you're traditional. But I do believe that.
It's a foreign concept.
Yeah. I do, however, want to say that when we talk about, you know, these structures in a family dynamic where we both take care of the household, we both work, we have the kid in the crash. I see it working sometimes,
right.
But I think in the long term, it won't. Because you're kind of like missing out on growing up your own child. You're kind of like missing out on the most important times because you both want to make a career. So I think whatever, this is my take on it, and I'd love to hear yours as well. I believe that whoever is the most masculine in their energy, whoever is like willing to kind of like be that nurturing parent, to stay home a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't want to say man or female or... Like,
I agree with that. Whoever's got, I would say, whoever's best at soothing children and predicting their needs, whether that's a dad or whether that's the mom, that's the person that they need to spend the most time with.
Mm-hmm.
Because what that does to the child is that they recognize that there's a safe place at home. And when they recognize home is safe, they then only attach to safe connections outside of the home.
Yeah.
Whereas when home feels unsafe or unstable, they search for nurture outside of the home because children need nurture.
Oh, yeah.
If mom doesn't give it, if dad doesn't give it because both are on their hustle, that child becomes prey for predators because we're designed to be nurtured and loved. So whichever parent has a natural instinct to put the child's needs first, and to soothe the child when they've got anxiety and to remain calm and pass that on to the child, that's the parent that should be predominantly in charge of that child. And if it's just not in your instinct, because not all women are maternal, not all women are considerate. Some mothers are narcissistic, it happens. If that is the case, then we limit the child's dependency on that parent because that can lead to trauma. And that can lead to that child then forming more trauma bonds in the future. So it really should be the parent that loves the role the most but stays at home with the child.
So you would say that for a healthy dynamic and parenting roles, you would say that it's good for the woman to be at home taking care of the child?
I think ideal scenario would
An
be
ideal scenario.
A woman, ideal scenario is a woman that actually enjoys being a mother. That's the most ideal scenario. It's no point having a woman at home if she resents the children, resents her life, and is then going to blame the husband for why she has to stay home looking after the kids all day. That negativity is contagious. It's contagious on the husband, it's contagious on the children, it's contagious. Whereas a woman who naturally enjoys the process of loving children and raising them, and as draining as it is, recognizes there's nowhere else she'd rather be, that's the ideal scenario. But forcing that on a woman where that doesn't come naturally leads to resentment and children become collateral damage.
Wow. And this is also why it's so important to have these conversations before, right? Like, hey,
absolutely,
where are you when it comes to parenting? Where you know, where's your
where
mind
are
at?
You?
Do you enjoy
the idea that your life becomes revolving around the children are egotistical. They don't care about your needs. They just want to be loved and soothed. Can you do that for this child? Now, if your answer is no, my needs come first, then let's limit your interaction with that child because it's not good for them. But if
also most women become,
Yeah, and I think unfortunately more and more women are becoming like resentful
Yeah.
towards the mother role, and instead of seeing the beauty in it, they see it as a chokehold. They see it as a cage, and it's unfortunate because it is actually a beautiful role. It's very draining. It's very unrewarding at first, but it's a great investment because when you love and nurture that child for the first couple of years of your life, that child becomes the easiest child to parent. But when you don't, you're creating a child that you won't be able to handle in the future.
I'm so glad you touch on this because that resentment, I see it more and more happening. Oh, I'm sitting at home while my man is making out a career for himself. Why can't I not make a career? Why do I have to be home? Right?
Yeah, and it's like they've lost the ability to be happy for each other.
Yeah.
It's competition. Instead of thinking, oh,
Absolutely.
my husband is doing so well for me and my babies, I'm so
Yeah.
proud of him. It's like, how come you get to go to the gym at 5 a.m. before work and I'm sat here with my stretch marks? Well, you don't want to, you know, like you don't actually want to do that. So you're just resentful, but you're not motivated. And that's the problem.
That is the thing. It's competition. It's becoming
Competition.
competition. Wow.
And there's no, it's competition rather than cooperation. And that's the problem.
Wow. And this is no, but this is such a big problem if you're listening right
It's a
now.
huge
You know how
problem.
many
And
people
the
are
worst
dealing with
is
this
when,
right now?
yeah, and competition is,
Especially in the West.
oh, absolutely. And
Yeah.
you see it at its worst when people have to co-parent. What happens is they're in competition for that child rather than being so glad that this child has got two parents that love it to death. They want to separate and say, no, you'll have to love me more. When really we should be inviting energies that love that child because you can never love a child too much, but they would rather win the battle against their ex than create a healthy child. And it's traumatizing.
Well, yeah, this is such a big topic because I really see it amongst peers as well, and I see it happening in the West where I'm like really
Traumatizing.
thinking, okay, you're a masculine guy or you're a feminine guy, whatever you are, but have this conversation up front when you're dating. If you want your woman to be dominant, if you want your woman to take the lead, like, because we also talk about like, oh, it always has to be the man. I hear that a lot. No, it doesn't have to be always the man. If a man likes to be submissive and you know whatever that's some kind of role play or whatever the rule is that you agree on, the point is that's okay if that works for you. I see it happening too, and especially for a lot of powerful men, they like to be a little bit more submissive at home. But as long as you really have that clear since the beginning, because the kids
And
can
just
never suffer.
boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah, just boundaries. And here's the thing with boundaries. People don't always know how to set boundaries, and they always think boundaries means I don't like this. Go
Yeah.
away if you're not going to. That's not what boundaries are.
No.
Boundaries are designed to keep people in your life, not push them away. And how you keep people in your life is teaching them what you can and cannot tolerate. Not like, oh, you do this and afterwards I'm going to punish you. That's self-sabotage. But simply saying, you know what, for me personally, I think I would really like a woman who enjoys kids. If you don't like kids and you don't, and you're going to be resentful, how about we don't have them or we part ways now? But what people do instead is they wait and wish for the best and then get furious. And it's boundary setting means saving yourself trauma in the long run by setting the guidelines in the short
I love that. Wow.
run.
I have one last question right here on my list,
Of course.
and that is what is if you could describe your ideal man, how does that look like?
I think an ideal man for me would be one that I can absolutely wholeheartedly respect his judgment in every area of life. I can believe that when it comes to mind, body, and soul, he'll make the correct decisions. He'll make the correct decisions what to do with his body. He'll make the correct decisions what to do with his mind in terms of work, business. You know, he makes his best decisions. And in terms of his soul, he's connected to something beyond this world. He's not just about money, sex, cars. It's something his soul is deeper than that. Like, and now if I find a man who has that in mind, body, and soul, and is really trying to achieve his best, what will happen is you naturally submit because you trust their judgment. What happens when you don't trust a man's judgment is you think if you let them lead, he might lead you off a cliff. But when you feel like you can trust his judgment in most areas of life, you put the blindfolds on and you say, you can make that decision. And even though you want to have a say, as a woman, you want to have a say, what happens is you have a say and you hopefully either agree, or if you don't agree, you trust his judgment. But when you meet a man who has no discipline, who has no kind of, it is not really controlled in those areas, you're scared to trust him. You're scared to let him lead. And as a result, you're scared to let your guards down and you remain masculine. So
I
that's
heard
what
you
I
say a trigger word. You said a trigger word, which is submit. A woman to submit to a man. I know you're listening right now. You always get a little triggered with that word. So let's elaborate a little bit on that. Also, respect his judgment. What about your judgment? Because I think you're a very intelligent, beautiful woman. I think you have a lot of judgments that are very profound and that a man would never see.
Well, in order for me to respect his judgment, it would have to be somewhat in line with mine. So for me to respect his judgment, I would have to know that it's in line with mine and in line more so with my best interest. So sometimes I want to make decisions that are not always good for me. I might want to, go and work with somebody who's might not have a great reputation, or I might want to post a video that might upset people. When I say I respect someone's opinion, what I really respect is I know they have my back and they have my best interest in mind. Now, I wouldn't be able to respect a man's opinion if I didn't respect, if he wasn't intelligent and if he didn't have my back. So they're almost prerequisites for me in order to submit. Because for me to submit, it means I trust you. Now, submission is something we have to do as human beings anyway. I have to submit to my boss at work. I have to submit to, if I'm to the police at times, I have to submit to the laws. I have submitting is what we do by default. Now, if we're
Amen.
going to be in a partnership with somebody, we need somebody where he can submit to what I need sometimes, and I submit to what he needs. So I have to pick somebody who I respect enough to allow that submission to happen, because I don't want to think all the time. I don't want to make decisions all the time. I want to know that when there are times when I want to turn my brain off, I can trust your judgment.
I love that. Nobody explains it better than you do. So thank you. Then because I
Oh.
wanted to touch on that because a lot of people like submit and they get triggered, but we always explain what that entails, and then you always explain
A
it the best.
beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful to
It's a
submit to each
beautiful
other.
thing.
Yeah, you serve. Also another thing, you serve each other. You do things for each other from an altruistic perspective. It's okay to serve. We are here to
And the
serve.
thing is, my
Yeah.
joy should come from his
Yeah.
joy. It
Yeah.
shouldn't be a competition. It shouldn't be like, well, he's so happy and why should I? I get secondhand glory from him being happy,
Yeah.
whatever that might look like. If that's me respecting his judgment, if that's, I get happiness from that. When I hear women getting almost vile and angry when they say, why should I have to cook for my husband? Or why should I have to listen to my own? Why should I ask him what to wear? Because if you don't take joy in somebody else's joy, you're not in love with them.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Is there anything
I
else
just got.
that you want to leave the audience with before we end this
No,
first
I just want
podcast?
to
And I hope
thank
to have many
you.
more.
No, I just want to, I just want to thank you for such insightful questions. I really appreciate the opportunity. And if you would like to find me, it's at Sadia, Sadia Psychology. And, I do personal coaching as well as lots of videos online on YouTube and so on and so forth. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Absolutely. I hope that we can do a definitely a part two at some point.
I would love
Yeah,
to. I would
because
love to.
this
Thank
is
you
gonna
so
be
much.
great. Yeah, thank you so much,
Thank
and
you.
I
Thank
see you
you.
soon.
Take
All
care.
right.
Bye.